Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Welcome to DIY for Business. It's Russ and Greg with you. Greg, I hope you're doing better than me. How you doing?
You are struggling with a little bit of a cold, huh?
I am, man. It's like the congestion thing is just killing me. So there might be times where you just hear me disappear during the interview here.
Well, I guess I am doing better than you are, to answer your question. Cold free, knock on wood.
I so bad want to talk about some of your new business plans on this episode, but I know we can't. I know we can't yet.
But there is exciting news,
really exciting stuff
that will be coming. I will be sharing soon.
Exactly. Now, so starting a new business is a spot where, of course, you've got to build a complete reputation. You got to, you know, get your name out there and be found. Mm-hmm. That used to be really hard, you know, like, and it's still hard. But it is made easier via AI these days, right? And it's using AI correctly, as I like to say, not just throwing some stuff in there. Like I've got somebody that sent me like 3 or 4 different letters. It's like, oh hey, I want to send this out, you know, and they send me this letter. This is not with work. This is with something else that I'm working on. And it's like you can tell just by reading the first sentence that it's AI. That this is not a human making this message. And it's just, it annoys the heck out of me. So what I did was I pasted the entire message into, one of the AI detectors and sent it back to him. And I said, why don't you get it down to 30%, not AI, and then we'll send it.
Well, I agree with you that AI has, a huge assistance in creating content nowadays. I don't know if it makes things easier. It makes things faster. I think it's just, you know, the way I would describe it is it's changed the way that I'm marketing this new business versus other businesses that I've started in the past. It's just different. It's pretty cool, you know, and I'm really excited to continue learning more about AI and how I can utilize it for different needs, right? Not just marketing needs. There's so many other things that you can take advantage of AI for nowadays. And it's just fascinating. I was joking before we went on. It's like you were asking me what conversation I was just having, and you said, you're probably about AI. And I go, all my conversations are about AI now. That's what everybody wants to talk about. So I'm excited for today's conversation.
Yeah, well, and I think, you know, like what we're touching on today is email marketing and AI integration with the email marketing. And that is such a spot where, I mean, if I can have a little AI assistance in sending out email and making it a little bit more personalized, making that open rate just a little bit higher, making the click rate a little bit higher because of information that we're putting into there, fantastic. So we actually have two guests joining us today. We have Robin Tully. He's an AI engineer and data scientist who built the data and analytics teams for Andrew Yang's presidential campaign. How cool is that? And then we have got Michael Levitz, an advertising agency veteran who's led campaigns for brands including Pampers, Samsung, Verizon, Volvo, and Zappos. So if we're going to talk email AI, we got the
That's
two.
Right.
That we need to chat with. So thanks for joining us, both of you.
Thank you for having us.
And of course, you two are working together on a venture. So why don't you tell us a little about that company first?
Sure. So we're basically the 0 to 1 for email newsletters and SEO content. So if you've had that project stuck in your backlog for, let's say, over a month, we help you get that launched.
Okay. Nice. Nice.
And between the two of you, like, what roles do the two of you have in this project?
Robin, you want to take that one?
Well, we are the, you know, early stage startup. So we both have all the roles in some sense and the constant putting out of fires. But yes, I mean, I am generally the more technical one and Michael is generally the more business side one.
Yeah, so I send pretty much all the emails and, you know, write most of the SEO content. And Robin does all the research data science on it to give me the insights I need.
Awesome. Awesome. And by the way, the name of the company, we should probably say that in the URL. So is it Forecasting or is it Forecast? Are you calling it Forecasting or Forecast.ing?
We call it Forecasting.
Forecasting. Okay, so forecast.ing is where you go to, and they've got an email newsletter. So you can
surprise, surprise on that, right?
get a good taste of what they're doing. So okay, so you know, we were just chatting. Greg starting a new business. Looking into potentially starting a new business. We'll say I don't want to reveal anything there, but. One of the important things in getting started is building up that audience, and a great way to do that is with email marketing. So how can AI help to assist and how can like a small or new business, medium-sized business, whatever, leverage AI to enhance those email campaigns?
Yes, so I think one of the, you know, kind of classic things is you're starting out a new business, you have a ton of stuff you want to say, and it's generally not what your audience wants to hear. So a lot of businesses, you know, big and small, just struggle with talking about what's relevant to their customers through the lens of the customers and using that language. So basically what we do is kind of flip it around and start with that audience data signals and then understand what the business is about and kind of help you live at that intersection. So you're always highly relevant to what your customers are actually focused on right now.
So Robin, what, you know, from the back end and, you know, doing the research behind that, how do you go about that using AI?
It's kind of, there's two sides to the equation and they meet in the middle a bit, but we start with trying to understand the brand a bit better and kind of any promotions or projects that you have going on. So we'll take your company's website and any brand docs that you have, any blog posts you've written, and just parse that and adjust that to get a pretty good understanding of what the brand stands for today. And then based off of that, we can use some of these external signals that Michael mentioned. Some of the sources we look at are like news and publications that are coming out, social media conversations, and actually like SEO signals, and try to find, okay, so brand A stands for the core theme A, and we're seeing conversations online that are related to that. So this can be kind of a good bridged message, and we can launch a new landing page or promotional campaign about some specific message because it has this good parity between what the brand stands for and what we're seeing online. But kind of as Michael said earlier, one of the things we've noticed when we talk to users is just it can sometimes be too hard to start that research process or to know where to begin. So we just want to give you that starting point of like, this is what you could say for the newsletter. This is what you could say for the landing page.
Is that also spilling into, are you guys like doing that for social as well? Or is it more focused on the landing page, like the SEO and the email?
So I think we have this kind of core packet of what we think of as like a landing page at large kind of thing. So like we have the theme that we want to promote, and then we want to exemplify that through a landing page, through a blog post, through the newsletter. And just try to unite, okay, you know, brand is coming out with this and we have this new core theme that should be marketed towards some demographic for some emotionally narrative reason. And thus we can give you kind of the research for the landing page and the newsletter and that. So like, it's kind of this whole package of just what does somebody need to know about this theme to then basically get click through to your site, to any of these other sources.
And so, you know, forecasting, Are you actually like trying to predict the success of those campaigns, predict like conversion rates, things like that, before you're even sending?
Yeah. So we think of it as kind of this pre-A/B test, where if you're doing an email newsletter, you should probably still do some actual A/B testing and canary testing and all of that. But we do look at your historical campaign performance and the draft emails that we've generated and train a model for your business's previous campaigns of that type and use that to predict open rate, click-through rate, whatever kind of key metric you want. But I think one of the strengths of our like platform is a little bit more about like, okay, here's the 20 new themes that you could use, include in this message, and we can stack rank them by which one we think is most effective, and we'll give you the open rate for it. Mm-hmm. But that should just be the kind of starting point of like, you know, do the A/B testing that you otherwise would have done, still kind of tune the message as you may have done, but just have this data-driven decision earlier on. Like, I guess another thing I would say is when we've spoken to people, and they are doing A/B testing, they might do kind of like minor subject line variation or that kind of classic thing of, is the button this shade of blue or this other shade of blue?
Right.
It's very hard to A/B test something where it's like, should the promotional email highlight the core features of our product, or should it be a case study, or should it be kind of a narrative storytelling thing? So just that kind of like differentiation of, hey, here's some of the core themes that we have, and okay, we think emotionally narrative storytelling is actually going to be the move for this email. And now A/B test some of these different, you know, emotionally narrative subject lines. So
yeah, it's
hopefully that's a little clearer.
Yeah, absolutely. It's very helpful. And you know, one of the challenges that I'm always facing in my email marketing is there's different personalities that you're emailing to, right? And certain messages are going to be more effective, you know, with an analytical personality, or, you know, somebody that loves the story, the narrative, like what you were saying, Robin. And I was just wondering, do you guys get into evaluating who the audience is to optimize the type of message you're sending to them?
We're not super interested in doing the actual, like, okay, you have this customer list yourself and we'll start carving it up. But if there are kind of audience segments that you already know exist, we are then interested in doing the, okay, like the enterprise audience hangs out in these kind of social media circles, and we will independently research the themes for the enterprise audience there versus the consumer audience reads these news and publications. So when we have that kind of core body of work about, okay, the brand stands for this and has these audience segments and customer segments, we will then search the right places for these external signals and try to do this kind of curtailed thing of, yeah, like enterprise audience was most resonant with these kind of core value propositions and has these conversations, and thus this theme will be relevant. But we want to be kind of the first step in the email writing process, where you're just getting the draft copy and the research report and all of that. So that level of like, hey, is customer A actually in this audience segment or this other audience segment? It's less of that and more just about, okay, if we have these kind of audience segments overall, what is the compelling themes for those segments?
Let's dig into that a little bit with the segmenting. So if they're coming to you and they've got the segmented lists, great. What advice do you have for a small business that is, or small, medium-sized business? I keep saying small business, but you know, small, medium-sized, what advice do you have for them to, you know, start to be, you know, segment those lists so that they have the best chance for success?
Yeah, so this is something I've kind of focused on while Robin's been building all this genius stuff. So, you know, when I started working with them, you know, I was coming from a more kind of enterprise place with, you know, brands like Samsung, you know, and really kind of overbuilt. And once I kind of walked in their shoes for a few months, you know, what I realized is generally there's a ton of stuff going on, you know, beyond email. And, you know, more segmentation is creating more work for people that, you know, don't have time for more. So, you know, step one is really, what's the minimum number of segments that you can create that kind of maximize the impact, and just come up with the kind of absolute fewest number of messages and do those really well.
Yeah, that's smart, right? It's kind of the 80-20 rule, right? So you kind of narrow it down, streamline it, and optimize so that you're not trying to be everything to everybody when, you know, the outliers is not worth your time, right? And you know, not worth the company's time as much. I think it's interesting when you say it goes beyond the email, right? It's, you know, once the email is there, then they're clicking through hopefully to a landing page. How are you using and utilizing AI to create these landing pages?
Yeah, so I think, I can't remember if we were talking about this right before or right at the beginning, when nobody wants to read a bunch of AI content, right? Mm-hmm. So the, you know, what we don't want is a bunch of...
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Stuff created by machines, read by machines, and, you know, everyone's bored by it. So kind of similar to the email idea, it's what are people actually interested in right now? What are the problems that they're facing? And how do we then create pages that help them solve problems? So that's where the AI is kicking in. It's basically just ingesting as much relevant content as we can on both your brand side and your audience side, and then basically summarizing that for the, you know, let's say marketing manager to just basically like be as precise as possible. But then they actually need to take that and, you know, do that last 20% to make it great, human, authentic content.
Yeah. So I want to follow up, like, how do you train AI to give you those options and give you that type of content? Like, what type of information are you feeding it? You know, where are you pulling it from when you're dealing with these different clients of yours?
So I would say we try to think about like the decomposition of tasks pretty thoroughly. And I think our best success is like, I think it's difficult to just take a agentic model or an LLM and just say, hey, here's like an entire wall of text, do the whole thing. You get some of these kind of lost in the middle context problems where the model can look at the first part of the context and the end and loses everything in the middle. So the thing that we try to do is say like, all right, in order for the model to assist you in this research, it needs to go find news articles, and it can generate a list of, you know, queries to find news articles or whatever example, right? Just these like decomposed tasks of do this little thing, be able to pull some kind of quantitative signal from this little thing, and then use that for some broader purpose. So like, okay, you know, go pull the emails from Klaviyo. All right, now we have click-through rate from that call, and we can use that for like direct concrete tasks. And it won't hallucinate about what the click-through rate is because we're just using it in this kind of agentic way of like, you know, call these APIs and pull this data. So overall, I think it's just this like try to find the small portions of work that can be automated that are fast to do in some sense, but you have to do a lot of them and can be fast reviewed. And that's generally the kinds of things of what I would think of as like good starting points for automation rather than just saying like, here's an entire, you know, HTML page. Please render it, but make it slightly funnier. I mean, I think that's like, you will then frequently get into just round and round and round of feedback. And that's fine. I mean, that's still a massive boon for writers, but I think in terms of like repetition, one of the things that helps is just this, like break the task into as small units as possible.
Yeah. And I would say that would probably make it easier for prompting as well, because you're prompting the AI to do the little tasks instead of prompting them to do something large, right? Like just in general, when working with AI, that would be a good way of handling things, is breaking things into those small tasks. So you're creating smaller prompts, right? Or
the prompting becomes more straightforward. One of the big value adds is you can start using smaller models. So instead of just calling like the ChatGPT 4.0 web interface, you can have Llama 3.2, some open source model, and you can train that yourself and save yourself on API calls and all that kind of thing. So like the series of smaller tasks is cheaper, easier to develop, more testable. And then, yeah, you do get into that kind of fun world of like, all right, we're fine tuning or distilling, you know, this lower weight model for this very specific task. And that can kind of help overall.
Right. Yeah. So I will say for the podcast, I've got different, you know, just different, you know, versions. I did the models on ChatGPT so that I've got create the podcast description. You know, it takes the transcript and it writes the description, and I loaded in all of our previous descriptions that I wrote, and now it just writes them like I was writing them. You know, it's pretty darn good when you focus, and it just does that. And then, you know, I also have a different one that will do some social media content for us, so that, you know, it's creating those. And it's looking at our previous social media posts to learn from that. And it was easier for me to break those up into two separate models instead of having one that just does everything. So I guess it's also, it's more API calls. It's more, you know, calling out. I'm just prompting it myself and just, you know, copying and pasting into the ChatGPT interface. But, you know, the whole API thing and all the different credits and the way that they count stuff is crazy confusing, you know, because they don't say like, oh, if you send this message, it's going to cost you this much. It's like, it's all the tokens or whatever that they're doing based on the different models that you're using. That alone can get just out of control as far as you know, just even understanding the costs.
It's really interesting to just think of like what LLMs can actually do and like how simple the task is. At the end of the day, they predict the next token in a sequence. And right. If we have a model large enough to do that, we can do these, you know, incredible things out of like emergent properties we don't really understand. But yeah, it is funny when you start wrestling with like context length windows and output token size and and then you start seeing the stuff of Gemini 2, you know, 2 million token context window.
Right. It's just, it's changing so fast, you know, and now there's I'm blanking on the name of it. I'm sure you could help me out. The new one that just came out of China that was just released. DeepSeek. There you go. How is that going to change things, you think?
So DeepSeek is a open source model. The weights are public. Which for one thing I think is incredibly powerful to have a ChatGPT competitive model that has full open source weights. Mm-hmm. So I think that I don't know who will win, you know, this arms race. And I just think the only thing we have here is just saying like there will be some arms race and a new model will come out every week that performs of the best on academic benchmarks. But I do think it's incredibly meaningful that like a smaller team, I don't remember the exact training cost of DeepSeek, but it's $6 million or something around like that. There.
Yeah. Right.
So yeah, like, I mean, the technology is moving fast. The entrance barriers dropping. There are new research papers every day. There was this thing of like, I saw the other day, S1, and it's, you know, one of these like distilled models. So you use another model to create prompts and training sets for the smaller model. And then they kind of said this, like, we spent $6 to train this model and perform the best on some academic benchmarks too. So it is kind of the wild, wild west in some interesting
way. Yeah, totally. I mean, the whole interesting thing about it though, is that it's opening up so much for those small, medium sized businesses. And actually, Michael, that's a question for you is, you know, the stuff that you were doing at, you know, you had Samsung and Verizon and, you know, Zappos and Volvo, like those are, you know, enterprise huge brands that could do these amazing things because they just had all the resources. And now those resources are sort of opening up to the small, medium sized business. What were things that, you know, you thought back then that, oh, there's no way, you know, this is such an enterprise advantage that now just the small, medium sized businesses can do?
I mean, it's a great point. I think part of it is kind of take it from another angle. Those small and medium sized businesses to compete have to be doing all the same things basically that a Samsung or a Volvo yep. are doing. But they're doing it with, you know, a fraction of the team. So, you know, I think what's really interesting is these tools are basically letting everybody kind of punch above their weight. You know, so one of the things we're really focused on is, you know, when I was at Samsung, I had a whole business intelligence team and they would fly around the world and observe how people are using their phones in all these different contexts. You know, here's what's happening in food photography and, you know, Seoul right now. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what we're focused on is basically how do we give a brand that, you know, without having a whole team that's just focused on, you know, that piece of research. So I think it's really exciting because brands can basically, you know, now leverage all of these insights without having to invest in the, you know, kind of traditional research.
You said earlier, you know, robots talking to robots in a way, you know, it's like, you know, now with the, you know, the latest changes, I'm a Mac user. So now I've got, you know, my notifications are coming in. I've got notifications coming in the background of my screen here that are telling me letters summarizing my emails that are coming in. You've got, you know, one email about this, one email about that. It's like, how do you get an open rate when now you've got people that are not even reading the message? They're just reading a AI summary of the message. Like how do you still keep and maintain open rates and our subject lines and things like that? Even, you know, like, do they even matter now? Is it just more about like training the AI on the other side in your message so that you actually get somebody interested enough to open it?
Yeah, that is something we're very focused on. You know, so we pretty much look at every email as, you know, making a bet, you know, and that's what Robin was kind of talking about with the message identification being so important. You know, you have basically an infinite amount of things you can say to someone, but you have to commit to one. You know, and obviously you can segment and send multiple segments, but at some level you are making a commitment and saying a thing. How do we, and that's where the forecasting name comes in, you know, how do we get you to think about this like a bit and then get you to kind of like maximize your odds of being relevant?
Are you finding that there are AI personal assistants that are just evaluating all the emails that are coming in for that person or that company and, you know, figuring out which ones to trash and which ones to actually send through to a human? Is that happening yet? Or I know it's going to happen.
I haven't seen that as much as, you know, the whole deliverability kind of side of email has gotten very sophisticated. And I think probably it's happening without us, you know, we know it's happening without us realizing it, where Google and Yahoo, the whole Yahoo-Google movement, Superhuman, all these email clients have basically taken this upon themselves and created their own way of kind of, you know, detecting how good your email is. They're looking at basically, hey, before we deliver this email, what's happened in this email blast? Is the open rate low? If your email blast open rate is low, the next set of people to get your email, you know, it may go to spam or it may just get buried in promotion. So there's a lot of filtering happening. You know, a lot of it is from a safety side of things of, you know, phishing scams and the way emails become, you know, problematic. You know, they've really kind of amped up security for that reason. But the result to marketers is you now have a responsibility to send emails that people are actually opening. Otherwise, they will put you down in kind of visibility.
I remember, I go back to the days of SEO, you know, the little black hat tricks of like, let's just put a bunch of white text on the bottom that's, you know, on a white background and we're going to show up and search and, you know, all of a sudden we're number one and, you know, or create, you know, 500 pages with exact word content and, you know, all the old tricks that, you know, used to be done. It's interesting now, you know, like that's evolved so much and that's changed so much where, and AI is getting into that and, you know, AI, you know, who knows could be replacing, you know, Google search completely at some point, you know, and we've got to learn all these new tricks and all the different things. Let's get into that on those landing pages and the SEO content side of things. What are you guys doing differently now on those pages to make those? And yes, I know it's landing pages for email campaigns, but I'm sure it's also for ads and for SEO and sort of, you know, lead magnet stuff that's being placed out there. What are you guys doing differently, and what can a small business do, small medium sized business do to help you know, their landing pages and their content show up a little bit more?
I mean, I think it's like a multi-part thing where for us, one of the things that we do is, yes, like SEO volumes and traffic and competition is just implicitly one of these like sources we look at. So if we're designing the page for theme A, we will go pull up relative keyword metric performances that are good for that page and kind of include that in the draft copy and the research that we're doing. So for us, that's kind of a signal from the very beginning, both because it'll help with organic, but also just because we think it is kind of a meaningful track of user behavior for these keywords, even beyond SEO purposes. It's just like, do people care about this thing? Yes, they're searching for it. So I think that's how we kind of approach that. And it's a little bit of this, like, if the theme is sufficiently fresh, and if you have kind of a new batch of fresh themes every week, you'll be making new landing pages that have new explorations to make, and you'll kind of refine them over time. So just kind of that thing of like giving fresh ideas rather than repeating the same old things over. And then in terms of like, what can small, medium sized brands do? Like, I mean, I can pass that part back to Michael.
Yeah, I mean, for us, you know, we do treat it very similar to the email signal of what is your audience kind of telling you from their data signals? And then how do we create the content that, as Robin said, they're already looking for, or they're already kind of telling you they have a problem that they want to solve? You know, the biggest miss is you're basically just, you know, sitting in your office and talking about the things that are important to you, your Q4 revenue goals, and not the things that your like customer actually cares about right now. Or you're just flying blind. You know, you ship this thing, everybody who's bought it has opened the box and had the same problem, and you're not even talking about that.
Right.
You know, we want to make sure you're actually talking about the things that people, you know, are experiencing.
I sort of think about, you know, again, going back to the old days, right? Like what would I monitor? Well, page views or hits, you know, like how many page views did I get on this page? Because that's really all you could monitor back in the old day. You'd have your, even the hit counter on the page. I'm going way back now.
You know, speaking of monitoring, I had a just this random question that I'd never thought of before. Yeah. You know, and obviously on websites, you can do heat mapping and you can see, you know, where people are going and stuff like that. Can you do that on emails?
You can, there is a kind of a magic pixel thing you can do based off of certain email platforms. There is also just the, like, you can always do the, you know, backlink tracking and put in query parameters to the URLs you're using and get that as kind of not like focus heat map, but, you know, click through tracking.
Okay. Yeah. And that's where I was going too, Greg, is like, what are the new what are the new metrics? Like, what are the metrics that we can, you know, look for now? Like, it just used to be, you know, what's the open rate? What's the click rate? What's the conversion rate? Like, are there additional numbers that we should be paying attention to when sending out emails?
So I think this is going to be like pretty tied to the email service provider that you're using. But we do see, like, in that space overall, you know, like a new platforms coming out that are kind of more technical and like more data driven and have kind of this like either more developer friendly or just more analytical side. Like, we hear more and more about people using Braze, and I know Braze supports quite a number of these like fairly sophisticated analytics you can get.
And I think this is where the integrations become so important, right? You know, email is still kind of isolated in a certain channel. You know, the more that you can reach into your, let's say, Shopify platform and understand, hey, is this person buying, you know, Nike or Adidas? You know, the way you talk to a Nike and Adidas person could be completely different. You know, and if they've bought a Nike, they may never buy an Adidas. So don't send them anything about Adidas. So, you know, I think the new metrics are, it's a great question, are definitely coming, but it's not going to be able to come from an isolated kind of implementation of email, you know, that's where you're going to want more from your ESP.
Yeah, this topic is just fascinating. I could talk to you guys forever about this, and I probably will, because Russ already leaked that I'm going to be starting something. So, but for people like me and others that want to get a hold of you, what's the best way?
Just shoot us an email, Robin@forecast.ing.
Awesome, and you know you can learn more on the website at forecasting. It's forecast.ing. I hadn't heard of the ing extension. I'm kind of excited about that. I've got ideas. I want to go buy some domains.
Do it. Hey, Robin cued me in on it. They're not cheap. So I
was really?
Okay. Well, maybe I won't go buy some domains. They may not be cheap, but I am.
I sent Robin a $10 one. He sent me back a $3,500 one.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right. Yeah, it's amazing how you know few domains there are available, and you know how much some of those are, you know, so much money now. It's like I had domains that now I see that I've let go that are on that resale market for like a couple of grand. I'm like, why did I let that go? What was I thinking? Thank you both for joining us and you know helping us to learn more about this. You know, as Greg said, there is so much to learn about this. And, you know, one of the things, like, we call the show DIY, and it's, you know, hey, you can figure out ways to do it yourself, but there's also, you know, companies like your guys's that you can go just jump in and you know, get a little bit of a head start on everybody else, because they're gonna help you out. So thank you both for joining us and sharing your insights on your company and the email AI automation movement.
Yeah, thank you guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
I'm looking forward to seeing what your business is.
We'll be in touch.
Yeah. You gotta see. This is like a stay tuned moment, right? Like you gotta stay tuned and figure this all out. We'll unveil as we go. It'll be kind of fun. So thank you all for listening, subscribing, and reviewing DIY for Business. The subjects that we cover on this podcast are selected with the goal of helping your business grow. All of the information provided is opinion based, and you might want to consult a professional to discuss your exact business situation. Greg and I want your company to succeed, and we are happy to take your questions and your comments. Just head over to our website, DIYForBusinessPodcast.com. The link is in the podcast description or just wherever this is. If there's a way to chat with us, do it, and we will get back to you. We've built entire shows around comments that people have given us and questions that they've asked us, so we'd be happy to do that for you as well. We thank you again for listening and subscribing to DIY for Business, where you are not alone.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.